authorities, there's a tar obligation as far as metal is concerned, and there's a dispute, and the rabbinic obligation, everyone agrees, concerning glass. There's an interesting argument concerning aluminum. Aluminum. You see, the Torah gives us six specific metals which are found in the Torah itself. Six types of metal which the Torah enumerates. Well, what an interesting argument concerning aluminum. Aluminum. You see, the Torah gives us six specific metals which are found in the Torah itself. Six types of metal which the Torah enumerates. Well, what about aluminum? Aluminum is not found in the Torah. Aluminum is bauxite. It didn't happen in those days. Is it a new world product? Is it? Where's bauxite? South America somewhere? Where is it? They didn't have it. They didn't have aluminum in those days. No one's good social studies here. They didn't have it. So the question is aluminum a Torah obligation or not? So some say yes, because metal is the difference. This metal, that metal, all the same thing. And others say no. It's only those metals and not aluminum. It's a major dispute. And this could have relevance. Remember we discussed a little bit last week about disposables? Remember that? Yeah. Disposable, tins. You require to do tevila. So many possibly say the answer is no. You're not required to do to sort of Moshe seems to have held. You're not required to be total disposal because they're not a kabbal tumma. And even if you decide later you want to use it, that's your decision. Maybe well, it belongs to you, not in the hands of a guy. And others disagree. So whenever you discuss a dispute, it's important to know whether it's a Torah obligation or a rabbinical obligation. So of course, there's some who say that the entire obligation is rabbinical. But those who say it's from a Torah, what about disposables that are made from aluminum, I think, right? Aluminum, mm-hmm. Correct?
Yeah, aluminum.
So if aluminum is the Rabbanon, which is what many say, would be an additional reason to be lenient in the case of disposables, because the most that we're talking about is an obligation which is for the Rabbanon. As opposed to those who maintain that aluminum is Minatora, like other metals, then it's I mean, we could still perhaps be lenient, but at least it's a more of a question. Okay, so it's important always to know whether the whether it's a Torah obligation or a rabbinical obligation. All right. The obligation of being total kalim is limited to those kalim that actually touch the food. Touch the food. If it does not touch the food, there's no obligation to be those kalim. We also discussed a little bit about bladed kalim. General assumption is that bladed kli, if it's really a plate, and it's, say, plated with glass, or plated with metal, there would be an obligation of tevila, even though the main part of the kli is, say, earthenware. But if it's just a spritz, we call glaze nowadays, you just take a little, and they put a very thin gloss, you can't really feel it, that we assume it does not require tevila. We mentioned before that the obligation of tevila applies if it belongs to a guy. If it ever belongs to a guy, then you have to do a tevila on it, even if it belongs to a Jew in the interim. You buy a metal kli in a Jewish store, but it was made by a non-Jewish, in a non-Jewish factory, it was never tribal, so you have an obligation to the tribal as soon as you buy it. Before you use it, I should say, be more precise. Similarly, it was made by a corporation, and the corporation is owned by Jews and non-Jews, and then you buy it, then once again you are required to be tribal. Big question is, can you use a kli which belongs to a Jewish proprietor who does not travel this kaleb? A discussion here about someone who wants to go to a kiosk. Perhaps once I translate that, that term. Alright?
Yeah.
Kiosk, yeah. Or some other restaurant or hotel, which is kosher, but the kli was not tabled. Maybe you use that kli or not. So many say yes and many say no. What's the issue? What's the issue?
Isn't it the same as
a
corporation that's owned by Goyim and a Jew
using in
the
Israel? No. The Jew uses a non-Jew's kaleb, he does not require it. Let's say, for example, you have you know, I don't think they have it anymore, probably not. When I was growing up in the 14th century, when I was growing up, they used to have a milkman who would come and give you milk in a glass bottle. I never saw milk in a glass bottle your whole life. He'd come every day, the milkman, and he'd fill up the bottle, he'd give you back, and then the bottles would go back. No one had, I'm sure no one had any recollections whatsoever. But the bottles were owned by the Goyish company, and they'd give you five bottles, and then you'd give back the five bottles, and you'd put it outside. I still remember it. I think maybe it still be in my father's house, that little tin thing, maybe that used to put the bottles in, and if the bottles, you put five bottles out, and you'd take the five empty ones, put the five full of them. The glass belonged to the Goyish company, and they just put it in. So is there an obligation of Tevilas Kalim in this case? No, because it belongs to a Goy, it continues to belong to a Goy, and you're not required to worry about it. The problem is, if you acquire ownership, that's when it becomes a problem. So here then, it's owned by a Jew. But there's a different issue. It says in Shulchan Aruch, that what's called clay schora. For example, I'm in the glass business. I sell glass, I'm in the metal business. I sell pots and pans. I'm not required to be terrible with the pots and pans in my store. It's called clay schora. Not required. Some suggest that the restaurateur, the owner of the hotel or the kiosk, he's considered like schora. It's a business matter. He doesn't live there. It's just a matter of a business, so perhaps he should have no obligation to be told of the kid. Most authorities say this is absolutely incorrect. Place schora means that you are selling as is, empty. So the pots and the pans and the glasses empty. Here, you have these pots, pans, and glasses, which you're going to use on a regular basis to fill with food, to cook, and to serve to your guests. That's not called place store. And if there exists an obligation for the person who owns it to be told with it. And for this very reason, no one can use these kelim unless they were told with. So here's the difference. If they cooked it in pots and pans, and then they gave you the food to eat on a paper plate with a plastic fork or knife. Not a problem. Sure, it's a problem that the owner of the restaurant is doing the wrong thing. But maybe he's not wearing tzitzitzila. Maybe he didn't put on tefillin. That's not my business. I just come on off to make sure everything, I'm not doing anything wrong. So therefore, it's his problem. It's not a kashrus problem. It's his problem. That's not a usage problem. I didn't use the pots and pans directly. I'm eating from a paper plate. But if you want to eat with a metal fork and knife, if we're not terrible, it's a very serious problem. Most poskim say that you may not do so. You may not do so. That's what Chazanish said that way, or Moshe Feinstein said that way. Most gedolim, Rabbi Yosef said that way. Shlomo Zalman said that way. Unless, whatever, he gives some kind of a possible cooler of Shlomo Zalman, because maybe, since you have no ability to be told of something, so maybe you're not required to do the mitzvah. In other words, if I have a plate, I have a fork and knife. So it's in my capacity to go to the mitzvah and be tailored. So I'm required to do so. And if I don't do so, and I eat with the fork and knife, I'm being about the mitzvah. Which Shlomo Zalman and his great Tzidkus and Chosmo was trying to find some kind of justification for those eating these kiosks with no tefillah. Well, look, if you say, listen, Mr. Arvid, give me all the forks and knives, I go to the mikveh be tevel. So you're out of your mind. I'm not going to give it to you. Since you have no ability to do so, Rav Shlomo Zalman thinks, well, maybe, it's not so bad. But that's very hard to justify this. Even Rav Shlomo Zalman himself is not so happy about it. Of course, this is all a footnote in the Tefillah's Kehillah book. Not so happy. So it's a big problem. We have to assume that if the OU gives hashkafa to a hotel, and there are pots and pans, if there are forks and knives, so one of two things. Either it's a goyish hotel, the forks and knives belong to goyim. You're just using the goyish clean, which is no problem. That's one extreme. Well, the other extreme is that they were tabled. But in between, it belongs to a Jew, and he bought it from a guy, and he wasn't terrible. I don't think that the reputable hashkafas would allow that situation to exist. Despite this minority view, which somehow finds some possible dispensation. Yes?
Going to a restaurant, food has already been cooked in a
non-tobal pot. Right.
It's okay to eat.
Yes, unless you eat from the pot. And the truth is, it's not only a problem of restaurants. You go to someone's house who keeps kosher, but they're not terrible to cater. You know, there are such people. We discussed this a little bit last week. So what do you do now? So you really shouldn't use them. You really shouldn't use those cater. It's a major problem. So big issue. What do you do? Go to someone's house? You do it. Problem. Yes, I'm sorry.
How do you see the problem of acquiring something, ownership, and then you have to tell them?
Well, if a Jew acquires something from a non-Jew, an obligation of tefillah, right? Now, you can say, I'm going to keep it in the drawer, I'll never use it for 50 years, and that's nothing wrong. But the minute you want to use it, there's an obligation to be tefillah first. This obligation is incumbent upon the owner, yes, but according to almost everybody, you may not use it if the owner wasn't tefillah. So only Rav Shlomo Zalman has this, maybe if you won't let your tefillah, maybe he said you're allowed to use it. But that's not acceptable by most of us.
Ownership and use it, really. I mean, when you go to a restaurant, you're not really
going to
own the
key. Yeah, but a Jew owns it. So the Jew owns it, the Jew is obligated to be titled it. And anyone who uses that thing before it's being titled is, in effect, being mevatel the mitzvah tefillah's keilah. Not trade. Who's not trade? But they're being mevatel the mitzvah. So Shlomo Zalman, Zichron LeBracha, wanted to suggest that I'm only considered mevatel if I have the option of being titled. But if I don't have that option, I'm not considered to be mevatel. That's not so simple. Others don't agree. It's a big problem. Remember, Rav Moshe has this interesting leniency. If you don't really need the kli, you can do without the kli. So for the Eved, you can use it even though you are in fact using it.
How far can you push that?
I told you, Rav Moshe, just in case you use your hands, then use a fork. So I don't know how far you go. Toast is that you don't really need it. You can have to move right without the toaster. I don't know how far it goes. Yeah?
You said that
mean anything. If a Jew had a faction, no problem. I agree.
Well, let's say a Jew
can
be married to a Jew. Oh, so you're saying if a
white man is forbidden to eat your assets, why don't you ask them to? Told to Jew A, you're Jew B. You also have to be told. Maybe Jew A should have done it, but he didn't. You know, in some of the stores in Borough Park, they have a mikvah premises. Even Queen, mikvah premises. So that's very convenient. You buy the kli and they put it right into the mikvah, and they take it off, finish it. It's wonderful. Okay. What if you're really stuck? You're really in a pickle. You have to use the sleeves just before Shabbos. You can't do it on Shabbos. You can't get the people before Shabbos. What are you going to do? Unbelievable, it says to do. Find a guy and give it to him as a matana and borrow it back. This is really a shtick. The shtick is, you give. What's the shtick? The shtick is, if it belongs to a guy, it says no obligation of tefillah. You don't like this, it's really a shtick, but it says quoted as a, like a last ditch effort if you have no alternative. So that's what they say. That's so great. Okay. A kli which requires two things. Kashering, it's called Hechsher Kalim, or Agolas Kalim, and Tvilas Kalim. So the proper order is first the Kashering, that's our next topic, which we'll either get to today or in 2 weeks. And Tvilah. Well, the Kashering should come first. If you don't Kasher it first, some say the Tvilah is no good. They use an expression of Tovel V'Sheret B'Yodo. That, you know, if someone goes into the mikvah holding on to something which makes the person tummy, so that's not right. Some disagree. They say it's the order doesn't matter, but that's the best preferred order for sure. Okay. Fine. We mentioned before the bracha is made different customs. Some say al tvilas kalim throughout. Some say al tvilas kli or keli if it's one. Some say al tvila. Some say al tvilas kli matkes. I think the minig is the proper way. Is a standardized text. Al tvilas kalim. Finish. If you're not sure if it requires a bracha, so the din is suffix bracha slahakel. They don't make a bracha on it. If you're not sure, you don't make a bracha. You should not talk between the time you said the bracha and the time you began the tefillah, and you should try not to talk till you finish the tefillah. At least something which has nothing to do with the tefillah itself. You're going to say pass the pot, pass the towel, or something of this nature. That'll be all right. I mentioned to be very careful not to hold on to the thing too tight. It's not best to do as well. What do you want is to be terrible with, I don't know, 50 pieces of flatware, one shot. Instead of putting it, holding every one, two, three, they put it in this basket. You ever seen the make for the baskets? So they have to be careful about two things. One, that you lower the basket, it go completely under the water. And number two, that the you don't put too many, you don't pile the flatware on too high. And then it's going to be very tight one against the other. And once again, it's going to prevent the water from getting in. All right. Now, we have to analyze exactly what kelim require tefillah. So in this book, he rattles off 210 different kinds of kelim. We will not read all 210 names out of this thing, but I will compare it rather to the list in Rabbi Felder's book, which is, I think, significantly shorter. He only has 25. Well, add 25, and then it becomes another 9, and then he says you need it, and another 8 that don't need it. So you're still moving up there. 25 and 42. I mean, still only 20% of 210, but, oops, wait a minute. You know, it's there, not same list, okay. So, yeah, let me read it in English, okay, because it's easier to get the list here. And then remember, if something which is concerns us, we can look at the Hebrew as well. Okay, it's one important point. Some people sell their kelim to a goy before Pesach. It's a big mistake. You're supposed to sell the chametz to a goy, not the kelim. If you sell a kli, you sell a metal or glass kli, you have to be tevel to get it when you buy it back from the goy. Oh, boy. Oh, this is terrible.
Melmac, or nylon, or stone, or wood, or animal bones, or corny ware, or corral,
or rubber, paper, or glazed utensils do not require tefillin. Here's what I told you last week. When I talked about the second edition, did I tell you last week? Did I tell you this? It is, in parentheses, it is preferable to be toldol, according to Corel, without a blessing. So I asked the author, where did this come from? He said, pressure. Pressure. What was the pressure? The pressure, people said, that, what they said. So once he goes back to source for all this, is to go back to the book of Tefillas Kelim. See, this book preceded. He tells you, look at Tefillas Kelim, Perek Dalit. Sif Chof. There it says, let's go back to the source. If you're in doubt whether a kli is required to be tovel or not, just do the tefillah without a bracha. But if it's a question about glass, right? Because it's not a question of a doraisa, it's only glass. Ein tzarach latvilo. Sveika de rabbanu l'kula. That's what the favorite tefillah is called, right? And on this basis, he quoted from our Moshe, that since quoting away in Corel, we don't know what it is. I mean, you know what it is. I went to the factory myself, but I'm not sure. Is it considered like glass? Is it considered like earthenware? Neither here nor there. So he said, this is only something in the Rabbanon. You don't have to be terrible. So the pressure built up. So in the second edition, you know, it's preferable to total without a blessing. I don't know. I don't do this. I hold the first edition. The first edition there. What does not require tefillah? A bread box, a can opener, refrigerator racks, vegetable bins, stove racks, toaster. Toaster with a chiddush. That was Rav Moshe's chiddush. He says it's not brought to the table. That's the reason he gives. That's hard to understand. And Rav Moshe adds, well, since you could have lived without the toaster, you have the bread in its regular state, so it's not so big. It does quote the same as tefillah, as Caleb says, that you have to be covered with a toaster with a bracha. So you go from one extreme to the other. Rav Moshe says, no. And he says to do it with a bracha. Of course, the problem is, if you're afraid it's going to ruin the toaster. It is a pretty high intensity electrical appliance toaster. It says, false teeth and dentures do not require to. Immersion heater, electric coil, says, does not require to. Why not? He says, well, Rav Moshe again. It's not a klisuda, it's only to heat up water. I don't know why that should be. That's what he says. The tefillas Caleb says, you could bet. The tefillas Caleb says, you have to do it with a bracha. See, again, Rav Moshe kept saying these things. He was afraid to ruin the kli. Right? Because he's going to ruin the version thing. Also, it's a lot of high intensity electrical stuff there. Yes?
What about the toaster
rack? Toaster oven? The food touches it, you have to be told it. If it doesn't, not. You can pull it out, so it's not a problem. Necessary for use, and the food which is used to prepare or to eat with could not be prepared or even without this kli, or something like it, that's called a kli suit. That's very much a big chiddush. So if you can eat with your hands, so the fork, you know, it's not serving such a critical function. So you don't need to be. Rav Moshe would never say not to be terrible forks, because there's some things you can't use your hands for. He's only saying if you're a guest in someone else's house, then maybe you can rely on that kind of dispensation. Whatever you could do without, maybe you're not really using it so much, because you really couldn't know without it. It's a big chiddush. But, you know, combined with Rav Shlomo Zalman said that it's not really your fault, because they said, well, let you do it. So maybe there's grounds to be leading to the combination of these two factors.
According to Rav Moshe, I believe, or think that he said, you can really cut off with a normal leg, so why would you
No, then the normal knife would have to have tefillah. I don't need to do it with your hands. That's what I'm saying.
Maybe let's say both ways. You could really rip it off with your hands in this way. You want it to look nicer. So you use a food processor for that. But you really need
food processors are used for something which sometimes you could not use, could not manage without that, I'm pretty sure. But Moshe's main clue is in two cases. A, you're a guest in someone's house and you have no choice. B, where it's an electrical appliance where you're threatening to ruin it. These two cases, he wanted to try to find leniencies, so he relied upon this factor. But otherwise, I'm sure he wouldn't rely on it by itself. Yes?
So can you make dispensations for things like secondary things that you use to make things prettier, you know, like a tea kettle, not a tea pot. You know, because you don't need a teapot in order to serve the tea, but you're doing it when your guests over and it's prettier. Do you have to be told something like that, or just if you're a guest?
Silver. Well, first of all, if you're the balabas, of course it should be tovered. If you're not the balabas, it's not your headache because you're drinking from the teacup, which is earthenware. That's just a serving deal. You don't care how what he did in his kitchen. As long as it's kosher.
You
meant this before.
You can't eat from it, you have to.
Right. But if someone used a non-tovered pot to cook meat, you can eat that meat with no problem. On a glass, on a china dish with a plastic fork, whatever, not a problem. Alright? Yes.
Are you supposed to ask?
If you want to ask someone to use Tevel Kekel, it's great. But if you're embarrassed,
is it wrong for not asking?
Is it wrong for not asking?
Every time you're a guest at somebody's house, excuse me, are you
Tevel Kekel? It's a very embarrassing question to kind of ask, right? It's not so simple. Not so simple to ask such a question. Yeah. It can be very embarrassing. You've got to try to get around that kind of situation.
I mean, should we be like, if you know the person is kosher, should you kind of be down
the class today? But some people never even heard of Tzvi Leskev. Never heard of it. Same as Tzvi Leskev. Nice to be down the class kosher, but you never heard of it, so it could be a problem. He's a bad person who's never heard of it. So he doesn't know what it is. Okay. Now, just to go through quickly, 210, just read through very quickly. Let's say, for example, the burner on your stove. Do you require to feel or not? What do you say?
No,
because you never put food directly on it. Alright. Again, electronic equipment is a source of major concern. Some are leaking because it's plugged into the floor, I told you. And some Rav Moshe is trying to be lenient when it comes to certain cases like the toasters. It's a very hard, big problem. In the tilas a dying cup. It's not required. Even though you may sometimes put some food in it, doesn't make a difference. That's an exception. Wow. Unbelievable. He says a food scale. If you put something directly on it, food directly have to be terrible, the metal piece. Wow. It's like a table. The metal table, you have to be totally table. I would agree with this thing about the scale. The scale is not a usage of a clear. I don't. It could be a big deal. Even he agrees there's no bracha. trays. You normally put the food on a plate, not on the tray directly, so it would not require a bracha. I agree. Yeah, if you have a butter dish made from glass or metal, you require a bracha to put the butter on it. One apple mixer requires the bracha. Up to 100 something already. That was quick. Yeah, here's an interesting one. You have what's called melka chayim. How would you call milk a chayim? What was that? Toms, that's the word. It's used for ice or for, you know, cookies and things. That requires tefillah. Touch of the food. So the salt shaker. The salt that goes in this. So the sugar dispenser. Again, assuming that it's made from metal or glass, would require a broth. Are we holding? You started already? I can't believe it. It's only 20 to 7. Okay. Who wants to learn Rabbi Karmai? Raise your hand. Alright, that puts me in a very difficult situation here. Yeah? Whoever wants to go, go. And we'll figure out what to do. Who wants to stay, stay. We'll figure out what to do. Okay, go. Do the behave. Send him my best regards.
Anything
colder than that, whether it be ice cold or room temperature or even lukewarm, it's a lot to be called cold. And there's no absorption of taste. And therefore, the way in which we see to it that whatever touched this utensil should leave is very simple. We rinse it off, that's all. We wash it off. It came in a medium of cold, it goes out in a medium of cold. You wash it off with cold water, and it's gone. All right, it's greasy. You have to use a little bit of soap, and you have to use a little bit of water, but watch out. You're better not using boiling hot water. If you use boiling hot water, all of a sudden you may, how should I say this? You may take the taste, which has been until now superficial, and introduce it into the metal of the kli through the boiling hot water, through the hot water. So we should tell somebody to use lukewarm water with soap, get rid of the grease, hope it'll work, and clean it off, not using very hot water. Was used in boiling water, hot water. So you do what we call hagola. What does hagola mean? Hagola means you put the item into hot water. How hot must the water be? How hot is hot?
Yeah,
how hot is hot? Correct. No, incorrect. That was correct. How hot is hot? It's called, I realize I have the wrong book here. The laws of Hagola and Libor are not found here. My Yoredei. The Shulchanor tells us, very nice statement. Dine Hagola the Libor, Aloim Ksuvim, Behilchus Pesach. So it, he has discussed it here. So we'll have to go a little bit about that. That the, if you want to look it up, it's the Simon Tov Nun Aleph, in the space. That's one of the longest simonim, many, many, many sifim. And among the halachas it says over there is that a kli should be kashered in water, which is what we call boiling, roasting. So an expression, water is male ababuos. What is ababuos? Bubbles. It's filled with bubbles. Or some say male recifa. It generates steam. All these indicate that the water is very, very hot. Why? Why must the water be so hot for kashering? After all, kabolo kachpolto. So what's the answer? Maybe it was that hot when it went in? Correct, that's the answer. Do you keep track of every single time you use a kli for trade for use? Someone you don't keep track? No one keeps track of these things. So perhaps it was used at 200 degrees in the trade for soup. So now you have to kosher with 200 degrees water. What'll happen, just in case, if you know perhaps we'll do fact, if you know for a fact that it was only used at 160 degrees. Never went above that one, it was even one single degree. Never. So how hot must the water be to kosher it? What would you say? No. I would say 160 degrees. Because the only reason why it says boiling this is an insurance policy. To make sure that you reach the highest level that it went in as trade. But if you know for a fact that it never went above 160, so then, you can kosher at 160. This is common in factory situations. In the house, you can never do this because you never know what's going on. It's not a scientific process. But in factories, depending on the minute of the food factory I have, they have very precise temperature charts. So much so that they have the graphs. It's a federal law that often requires it. Well, this side. So you know for a fact how hot it got. It's interesting because there are crashers organizations that will rely on the goy to kasha the kli between uses. Now wait a minute, rely on the goy? Since when is this? Well, it's often a combination of factors. One of them is that the what they call the CIP, I think it's called, cleaning in place. I think that's what it should be called. They have standard procedures to clean and to wash the kale in between uses, maybe end of the day or between uses of different products. And this standard operating procedure involves water, which is very hot. Hotter, let's say, for example, than the temperature that the tray for food is used at. But maybe they didn't do it. But the answer is it has to be documented for the federal government for their safety procedures, the contamination. And so there's a graph. The graph says, yes, when they cleaned, when they washed these dishes, pots, etc., they did it at 190 degrees. Which is higher than it's ever used in the manufacturing process. So there are those who will say we can rely on this, because after all, it's government regulated. There's a graph, the chart to prove it, the Mashgiach checks the charts and the graphs. He makes spot checks. And there are those who rely upon this. It's especially relied upon in a case in which it's not such a terrible thing. It's what's the word again? Ein Benyamin. One might argue that the Goyish company would be permissible to use it even without any kasher. Because the Xera of Ein Benyamin Otto Benyamin is a Xera upon the user, the Jewish user. The non-Jewish user functions in that fashion. So what's wrong? You say, what's wrong? This is even what we call the Chatchila. The Ramosha, the famous tshuva, when she writes, it's called, in this expression. Well, it's Ein Benyamin. That's not nice. So therefore, we require a kasher. All right? But the only reason we require the kasher is to prevent it from being unseemly, not to prevent the food from being trafe. There is much more grounds to rely upon the non-Jew and his record because of government inspection to assume that it was done in a proper way. As opposed to a case in which the stakes were higher. But if he didn't do it, even the food might be trafe. minyan. Ah, that's not nice. So therefore, we require a kashrut. All right? But the only reason we require the kashrut is to prevent it from being unseemly, not to prevent the food from being trafed. There was much more ground to rely upon the non-Jew and his record because of government inspection to assume that it was done in a proper way. As opposed to a case in which the stakes were higher. And if he didn't do it, even the food might be traded. So there's different cases. Okay. This is Kabbalah or Kafpolto, as it applies to what we call Hagolah. Now you may be aware of the fact that there are different levels of heat that we came across earlier in this term. Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, and Iru, remember that, all those things?
Yeah.
Well, Kabbalah Kafpolto applies here as well. If it came in with a Kli Rishon, it must go out of the Kli Rishon. If it came in with Iru, it must be taken out with Iru. Whatever the cliche, well, according to most authorities, it would be possible, really, you don't have to kashrut at all. But if you do decide you want to kashrut, because you want to be matmir, so then the post can say you can kashrut the cliche. That's the famous rule, kibolo kafpolto. The way it goes in is the way it goes out. Yes.
So if like an oven pan, like a metal pan, would you just fill it with water and put it in the oven?
Oven pan?
Has to be
we'll come to that in a minute. Not today yet.
Okay.
So we're only discussing what we call hagolah, which is foods which are prepared, what we call a liquid medium. So it goes in with liquid, it goes out with liquid. Liquid goes being water. Went in, tray for soup, Campbell's soup, it goes out. Water, Kibbalah Kafpolto. Yes?
What was that about the Kli Sheni and the Iru Kli Rishon? If it becomes tray for Iru Kli Rishon,
it goes out of the Iru Kli Rishon. In other words, if you pour tray for soup over something, the way to get rid of it is to pour out water over it. Follow? It's Kibbalah Kafpolto. Mishnah Brewer writes in Hilchos Pesach that if something became trafed with Iruy, you have to kasher it, the water need not be above Yatzalet as well. Need not be boiling. That's a Kiddush of major proportions. I would agree with that. I don't think that's what the Mishnah Brewer says. It's irrelevant in many cases. I'll give you the most common case. How do you kasher a sink? Well, there's a certain care that you cannot kasher. If your sink is made from enamel, you cannot kasher enamel. Nowadays, most sinks I think are made of metal. Take a poll. How many here have metal sinks in their house? There it is. Majority. So you can kasher metal. Usually our sink is trade, you can kasher the sink. I mean, we assume it's deep milk, we discussed before. We don't even Pesach, what about Pesach? So the possible say kasher the sink for Pesach. You can put the food directly in anyway, but you know, you should want to make it as kosher as possible for Pesach. So what do you do? So the thing we do at my house is we take two big pots. Fill them with boiling water. It's a long time for the water to boil in these pots. Very long time. Boil it. I don't know if it ever boils. It gets so hot that the bubbles, the steam. I wouldn't say 212 anyway, but okay, close. And then we take these two pots. Before we do that, we turn the drain of the sink so it doesn't let the water out. And stand with the pots and try to hit every last surface, sort of on the floor of the sink, and even on the bottom part of the side where it might back up, or it might touch something over there. And between the two pots, really manage to try to touch every single spot. In addition, it fills up more than empty sink. Sink's not that big. But now we want to make sure that we cash even the skin on the other sides, even the top side. So what we do is we're going to put on the hot water. Hot water. And we go to the very top. Was our house not exactly even? You know, it's like most good homes. So it starts to get higher. This one's woo, it's about to go over. Boom. So then we turn it off, and this we assume that we successfully captured the whole zinc. Most of it with what we call irui, which is the boring, and the remainder is look. We don't think it's really trefu anyway, but it can't be trefu klisheni. So. Truth is, even the water from the sink may be even with the vision. And even if it's not boiling, we said before, what becomes trade from here, where you want to finish the brewer, it's enough to kasher it with yatza lettuce, though. And we have to assume that the water in tap is generally yatza lettuce. Yes? Strictly speaking, it does not become trade from klisheni at all. We discussed this once before. We are machmer the chatchila when it's possible. It's going to be relevant. Someone took some trefa soup cube, for the right term.
Yeah.
Yeah, some loose dog soup cube, and threw it into your mug or dish. It's a trefa. So strictly speaking, it's not trefa because the soup was the water was put in first. It's just thrown in. It's called a cliche. And it's not trade in the first place. But if you wanted to kosher it, if it were made from an appropriate material, you kosher it by having the water which is a cliche. How do you water which is a cliche? I don't want to do that. Well, in that case, you have a pot, you pour it into a different pot, and then you you submerge this dish into that second pot. Is it cliche? Yes? We haven't got that yet. So let's get to the next. That was the same question. Well, there's one additional type of usage of a kli, which is called al ha'esh, with no liquid medium. He wants to go and say the kibolo kaf polto. Same way as it came in, that's the way it goes out. And that process of taking things out with fire is called libud. Libud literally means whitening. Whitening? Whitening? What's whitening? Well, with hot fire, which will whiten the pot and somehow eliminate the trace absorption. How hot must the fire be, the metal be, is a major dispute. It's really major, big time. Some say you need what we call nitzotzos nitzin. It should be so hot that the spark should fly. How high is that? Some possibly say it's 700 degrees or 800 degrees. Very, some say 1,000 degrees. Yet others say that we apply the same principle which exists with respect to Hagolah. We apply it to, namely, Kibolo Kaf Polto. So if we know for a fact that it went in at 400 degrees, we cash it 400 degrees. As you can imagine, this is very relevant to our ovens. Our ovens have thermostats, didn't happen in the old days. Our ovens have thermostats. You know, you never cooked above 400 degrees. You can't get above 500 degrees, that's it, it stops. So according to these other authorities, if you kosher at 500 degrees, so you're all free. You could kibolo kaf polto. What's the pshat? The big major controversy, what do we do? So there's a pshar, which is born in the name of our hanky, they had in Europe. Basis for the Mishnah Berurah too, and it was Pesach. Namely, if the food they wish to kosher, if the utensil which the kasher actually touches the food, then we try to maintain the stricter point of view. So we actually have these total yitzin. 700 degrees, or even more than that. On the other hand, if the surface, like we're discussing, never touches the food, even though we kasher it for afraid of steam, zeya, reicha, all these things we just spoke about weeks past, we don't have to kasher it to such a high temperature, but rather we say kabol or kapol. It's good news for the Jews as far as our oven is concerned. Because our oven, you generally speak, would not put food directly in the oven or the oven racks. I doubt it. So therefore, according to this psak, this compromised view, will be sufficient to kasher the oven by putting it up to the highest temperature. Yes?
What about a pot?
A pot? Because you don't have to keep, you just do a high color, boiling water. A barbecue rack, and you have the outdoors, a barbecue rack?
Yeah.
Well, people put their hot dogs straight on it.
Yeah.
If you bought a house of a guy, and he was kind enough to leave you his grill, so we assume, according to this compromise, you would have to make sure that grill gets so hot that sparks fly. You accomplish that? What?
Oh,
what? Put the food directly on the fire. Yeah?
Okay, soup doesn't
need
to be pure liquid.
Vegetables, in chunks,
right.
Might be chunks.
So,
treat it as liquid. Yeah.
No matter like what soup.
Well, how do you get something to be so hot? So some recommend blowtorch. You know the blowtorch, you take a look. Great ball of fire. I very absolutely discourage, and I don't want to say prohibit, the use of a blowtorch by a private citizen. It's simply too dangerous. There was some Nebuch, some woman who was killed kashering to Pesach with a blowtorch. I'm not kidding. Well, on fire, and it was a shiny rock.
What if
you call
us a professional,
they know what they're doing, and they blowtorch your oven, that's okay. Because they are experts, they're not going to be in danger. I hope they take safety precautions. I hope so. And that's fine.
You don't have to do that?
I don't think I have to do that. I think it's enough to just heat it up to the highest temperature. But of course, before you do that, you have to clean it up completely. What do they call it? Easy off? Is that what they call it? Easy off. And then try again, easy off. How long must leave it on? At the outside, an hour. We'll never get hotter than that. If you have you put up broil at 550, if you leave it on for an hour, it'll never get hotter than that. I don't know if you need an hour. If you need, take some time to get to 550. You have to wait a little bit longer, but I don't know for sure. Maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour, depends. Do a little experimentation. Find out for the food amount, you know, how long it takes to get to the highest. Wait another 10 minutes. That's it.
Do you need to kasher the thermometer?
Kasher the thermometer itself? I'm sure of that. Put it in the oven when that's self-kasher. The best kasher, in my opinion, is a self-cleaning oven. The self-cleaning oven reaches, 800 degrees, something like that. Is that true? So I was told. Very, very hot. It's true the door doesn't get that hot. Because the door is a safety device. They're afraid of someone gets killed on the outside. Even though it's locked and this and that, but it's 900 degrees on the inside and it's touch the outside, you can burn yourself. And they have special materials to keep it a little bit cooler in the door. But nevertheless, it can be lenient as far as the door is concerned. As we spoke before, open the door, it's on the side, and it's still getting pretty hot. But it's assumed that if you put on a self-cleaning oven, it's considered as having kashered the oven and anything found therein. If you have some kind of a pan or a grill or some other utensil which touches food on the fire, and you want to kasher it, my recommendation, put it in your self-cleaning oven. You may not get it back. That's true. After three hours, you may come back with nothing. We once had a knife, which we would put into something that came as a little bit of a knife, and went into the chicken on the oven, something like that. So you had a kasher, found it with fire. Blowtorch. They gave it to my friend with a self-cleaning oven. I got back the blade. The handle was white powder. We already pointed out that you don't kasher, and we didn't point out this best. You don't kasher, maybe we did, I can remind you. We don't kasher, I think we did, from milk to flations. Did you mention that before? I remember I saw some before? Did I mention it? You don't kasher, it's a minute, you don't kasher from milk to flations.
Okay.
it's from an accident thing.
Right, right. If a beef, if a milk, if a touch of beef, they cash it. But they don't cash it to change it. Okay, now, so we fell with a list of utensils, materials which can be kashered. Metal, wood, stone, is what I was looking for. Teflon, dash, only through levers. That's what I was telling you earlier. Many folks can say that Teflon is something which you cannot kasher with hagolah. Where did you get it from? From Moshe Feinstein. But others disagree. Others say it's enough time to have kasha with hagolah. Others say you don't. It's obviously a big dispute. It's going on for years. Another question. Maybe Teflon is the cloud trade. What is Teflon anyway? What is it? What's it made from? Anybody know?
Chemicals.
Good. But there are stories told that certain factories, they use certain materials on their kale to manufacture, which are maybe not kosher. So Rav Moshe is a very big kiddush. We're going to apply in other cases as well. Namely, we have a rule. They made a gzera, eino ben yomo, otu ben yomo. We discussed this before, am I correct? You cannot use a trefa kli which has been dormant for 24 hours, lest you use a trefa kli which is not dormant for 24 hours. Well, Rav Moshe writes, that's only true in the case in which it's possible for this type of kli to have a ben yomo usage. However, it is impossible. Why? Because it is a factory product. Whenever they put and have absorbed into the kli, no way it's going to come to your house in less than 24 hours after it's absorbed. Impossible. For this reason, it's there, never was said, and there's no need to kasha. Sure. Let's say we're afraid that in the factory they put certain things on the kli which are not kosher. Can't happen, right? So it's a major problem at first glance. So you should be disallowed. So Rav Moshe says, no. The gzeir of eino ben yomo, otu ben yomo. Remember, you know what that means? He said, don't use an eino ben yomo for fear you may use a ben yomo next. So this particular gzeir only applies when it's conceivable, when it's possible, for the same plea to be used in the fashion of Benyom. If it's impossible, inconceivable, the Xer was never enacted.
And aren't you thinking that Teflon was made out of something that's not kosher?
Thank you. Even if Teflon is made from a non-kosher material, it gets absorbed into the pot, right? So what are you afraid about? That the Teflon taste, or someone who has a taste, will come out into your chicken, right? It'll be eino ben yomo. It'll be stale taste. It'll be more than a day old. But you have a ruling that the rabbis made a gzera eino ben yomo, otu ben yomo. Getting you something which has been absorbed more than a day ago, because you may come to use it in the case which you absorbed within the last day, right? But am I dreaming? Do we speak like this before? Never. He's talking so long, anyway, when it comes to Bosa Bacholo, but come on, not bar not. We had a whole tuple about this. Eina ben yomo, ben yomo. You should know these terms. Midterms next week. You already know these terms. No, I gotta start all over again. Eina ben yomo means it wasn't used in 24 hours. Everybody knows that?
Yeah.
And ben yomo means it was. Perhaps I never mentioned it in Tamar, but I did. There's a gzeira, you cannot use a kli, eina ben yomo, for fear that you may use a kli when it's a ben yomo. That's the whole basis of all the discussion of the, you know, the meat to the dairy in the 24 hours elapsed, the whole business. So here, Rav Moshe writes a chiddush, it's only true, a set of chiddush, it's only true in a case in which it's a possibility that on a different occasion you may use this very same pot in a ben yomo situation.
The head is there. What
does that mean, the day it's made? The day it's used. The day the non kosher green was absorbed into it.
Right.
So, but in a factory, it's impossible. You know, there's a rumor that all toasters are tested before they're sold. We discussed toasters in connection with tefillah here. Let's talk about kasher. The story has it that they want to make sure that the toast is properly. They take one of the bread, or I don't know what bread they use there, and they put it into the toaster. See if it comes out nice and crisp. So there's all sort of, they started swirling all kinds of reports. You can't use any toasters because they were used for trade with bread. So I thought about what she said, so what? By the time the toaster comes to you, it's an Eidah Ben Yomo. And even though there's ordinarily a Xer one because of the other, it was never applied in this particular instance. You know, Moshe is a big liberal when it comes to this Xer of Eidah Ben Yomo, Otto Ben Yomo. He says, look, if it doesn't apply, it doesn't apply. And I'll tell you another psak, I heard from Rav David Fashion. I don't know for sure if it comes from his father, Rav Moshe, I don't know. But Rav David told us it's extremely relevant to many of us. What happens if you have a kli which is used by someone who claims to keep kosher, who tries to keep kosher, but it's what we would call substandard kashrus? Even Rav David told me, a conservative rabbi, that's substandard kashrus. Nonetheless, he ruled that if you want to use this kli and it's been dormant for 24 hours, there's no need to kasher it. Pretty amazing statement. The reason being that the Gzeira Eino Ben Yomo Oto Ben Yomo was only said in the case with utterly tricked, absolutely tricked. But where it's kosher by anyone's standard, this Gzeira was never enacted. That's extremely relevant. People, you know, end up with dishes from some relative who was kosher, but you know, you wouldn't want to eat there, it wasn't up to your standards, it wasn't da da da. So the conventional wisdom would be you have to kasher it. And if it can't be kosher, you have to throw it out. But according to this psak I once heard from Rav David, it's permissible. As long as there was some attempt to keep kosher, sincere attempt, and it was Eidah Ben Yomo. So these are very important rulings. I doubt others would agree with Rav David about this, but he said it. Yeah?
So
with
that
rule of Eidah
Ben Yomo, then if something would become trade, you would just be able to wait a day and then...
Yeah, well, not for the Xeri, wait 24 hours and do what you please. If anything which comes out, it's going to be a negative taste. Alright, is that clear? I hope I'm clear. We hope people think this is on tape. I hope it's clear. Not to call me up. Hope you can't even talk back. What else can be kashered? Rubber, plastic, or much can be kashered plastic except for Pesach. Pesach is much more strict. Melmac, same as Blair. What cannot be kashered? Oh. Earthenware, enamel, porcelain, glazed chinaware. What about the two biggies? The two biggies, what are they? Corningware and Corel. You guys just followed, I quote verbatim. Corningware and Corel utensils should not be kashered unless a great loss would be incurred by the owner. In other words, Rav Moshe says, we're not sure again. We're not sure, is it glass? Glass, you know, we assume, well, I'll tell you now, we assume glass is not really absorbed, Rav Moshe writes. I didn't discuss this. No, we haven't discussed this one. Glass is a contradiction in the Ramah. In Hilchos Pesach, the Ramah is strict when it comes to glass. And in, we'll see later, when it comes to Yayin Nesef, he's lenient. It's a big dispute. What's the difference? Some say the Rambam assumes that glass does not absorb anything. Only by Pesach, we have so many chumras that we have by plastics, together, by glass, etc. Others say no. Rambam is strict in all hot absorptions. He's only when it comes to cold absorptions, when it comes to what's called clay hayai and yai nesem kele. Where Moshe apparently is assuming a more lenient position, that glass does not absorb. And he says, well, according to Korel, maybe it's like glass, maybe not, so we don't know for sure. So if it's a matter of a shasat chak, a tremendous loss, it's ena ben yomo. So, suffer the rabbana. So you can be making. I get this question, Kaseda. People just asked this question last week. Someone traped up their corningware dish. How'd they do it? Unbelievable. Someone bought cheese with substandard supervision. Not all cheese which claims to be kosher is. So the rabbi in her synagogue said that the cheese was not good. Uh-oh. She used four different Corningware dishes. Then she called me. Not her rabbi. Now she calls me. The rabbi referred to me. Said, well, don't throw it out yet. We'll think about it. But this is a shaila. I have to know, to find out what kind of person is it. Have some meruba. Because the Corningware, the corner of the sock really should not be kosher. And the cheese, I have to find out how bad the cheese really was. It had some kind of certification. If we try to see what we can put together, maybe we can save these Corningware dishes, but not so simple. The Minig Yisrael is that even though glass is, according to many posts, not a problem, you use it for just like this, rinse it off and tray it and use it, or have it interchangeable for meat and dairy, the custom is not to do that. We try to be strict when it comes to hot use of glass dishes. We try. Okay. Now, you cannot kasher without golad unless you wait 24 hours after the original use. Let it lie dormant for 24 hours. You have to kasher the entire utensil. You can't do it at once, you can do it piecemeal. Not like tzvilas kelim. Tzvilas kelim has to be done all in one shot. Hagolas kelim has to be a physical, scientific matter. So you can do it 50-50. I mentioned before, I have to be perfectly clean before the Hagolah, otherwise the Hagolah will not get through. I mentioned before, irremovable spots of no discernible thickness. I've written a book called Hagolas Kelim by the same author. This author, Hagolas Kelim. Three times as fat. Maybe we'll go out and still be able to review the clothes we're in, and we'll have some blue things, some gold things. Okay? And the next topic is Yai Nesek. That is why I'm going home to touch things that I...